Welcome, Deep Divers. Have you ever paused mid-scroll, or maybe mid-read, mid-watch, and felt that kind of insistent pull, you know, between what feels just completely undeniably real and what, you know, intellectually is actually a carefully constructed story?
Yeah, that line.
That ever-blurring line between, let's say, authenticity and artifice in the stories we're taking in every single day.
It's a huge question, really central now.
It is, and it's precisely what we're here to unpack today. We're taking a deep dive into the mind and, frankly, the radical work of an author and filmmaker who hasn't just explored these boundaries.
No, he's been actively shaping them for decades.
Exactly. David Shields. He's a true provocateur, a relentless innovator, someone whose ideas have genuinely reshaped how we think about storytelling in the 21st century.
And that's the perfect way to frame it, because Shields isn't just, you know, watching these big shifts happen from the sidelines.
Not at all.
He's a fervent, almost, you could say, evangelical advocate for totally new forms of expression. He believes they're absolutely essential.
Essential for what, exactly?
Essential to reflect our contemporary experience. The way we interact with information now, with narrative, with reality itself. His work, it really challenges our deepest ideas about genre, about authorship, even about truth in art.
Right. He pushes us to question basically everything we thought we knew about how stories get told and how we receive them.
He really does.
So our mission today is pretty clear. We're going to try and understand Shields' fascinating evolution as an artist. We'll trace his journey from, say, his early, more traditional fiction.
Right.
Right up to his groundbreaking and, yeah, often polarizing manifesto, Reality Hunger.
That book made waves. Big waves.
Definitely. We'll look at how his radical ideas sparked both, you know, passionate praise and some pretty serious controversy.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately how they've profoundly influenced modern literature, documentary, film, and maybe even the way you approach the huge tapestry of stories you encounter every day.
Yeah, it connects directly.
We're going to explore why his work feels so urgent, so relevant, especially now, in an age where those lines between fact and fabrication, between the authentic and the, well, curated, just seem thinner than ever.
More permeable, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So to really get a handle on where Shields' ideas came from, this relentless drive to challenge artistic norms, his skepticism towards traditional stories, we need to rewind a bit.
Go back to beginning.
Yeah, go back to his origins,
mm-hmm.
to the environment where his thinking was really forged. David Shields, born in Los Angeles, 1956, into what's described as a lower middle class Jewish family.
Okay.
Now, his parents weren't, you know, your typical suburban couple. Both were journalists.
Ah, that's interesting right there.
Huge clue about the intellectual and maybe ethical climate he grew up in. His mother was the West Coast correspondent for The Nation for years, a political activist deeply involved. Her life was about pursuing truth, exposing power.
Wow. The Nation. Serious stuff.
Totally. And his father, a speechwriter for progressive politicians, a wordsmith, crafting messages to persuade, to inspire, to frame public debate.
So words and truth and the framing of truth were central from the start.
Can you imagine the dinner table conversations?
Yeah.
Not exactly small talk, I bet.
Probably not, no.
Then, 1962, Shields is just six. The family moves to San Francisco. Right into the heart of it all, the anti-war movement, the civil rights movement. Very politically charged atmosphere.
Right, in the thick of things.
And they weren't just observers. His parents were deeply involved. They often opened their home, offered it as a shelter, a safe haven for people involved in the movements.
Really walking the walk.
Absolutely. So this wasn't just childhood. It was like an immersion course in social justice, in critical thinking, in, you know, taking part in dominant narratives.
Yeah.
Constantly engaging with big issues.
So growing up around journalists, activists.
Yeah.
People always questioning, investigating.
It had to instill a critical perspective, right? Mm. On truth itself, how stories are built, the power dynamics behind them, how they get shaped and consumed.
You can absolutely see the seeds there. For his later work questioning artistic authenticity, the whole fabric of storytelling, he was almost predisposed to ask, what's real here and how is it being presented?
Exactly.
But what's really fascinating, I think, is that while he's absorbing all this critique, this deconstruction, he's also getting this incredibly strong traditional grounding in literature.
Right. He wasn't just rebelling blindly. He knew the forms first.
Precisely. He mastered them before he started dismantling them. So after that upbringing, he goes to Brown University, graduates Phi Beta Kappa, magna cum laude, 1978, BA with honors in British and American literature.
Okay. So seriously rigorous academic background, deep dive into the canon.
Definitely shows high intelligence, but also, yeah, a serious engagement with established literary traditions.
And then he goes on to get an MFA Honors in Fiction from the Iowa Writers' Workshop in 1980.
Iowa. Wow. That's like the pinnacle of traditional literary training. Exactly. So before he's tearing down genre walls, before the radical experiments, he was educated inside those walls, learned the rules, the mechanics from the inside out.
Which makes his later critiques even more powerful, right?
Yeah.
Because they come from this place of deep understanding.
Absolutely. He knew exactly what he was taking apart and why he felt he needed to. It wasn't naive rejection.
And it's that combination, isn't it, that critical activist background plus the rigorous traditional education that makes his early career so interesting to track.
Yeah, you see the shift starting.
His first steps are pretty conventional. Debut novel, Heroes, 1984, about a sports writer, college basketball player. Fairly standard premise, right?
Sounds like it, yeah.
But then, just 5 years later, 1989, Knopf publishes his second novel, Dead Languages. And this one's different, semi-autobiographical, about his own experience growing up with a severe stutter.
Ah, getting more personal, closer to home.
And here's where it gets really interesting. The sources say while it was still technically fiction, it used significantly larger shards of reality than the first book.
Shards of reality. I like that phrasing.
It's good, isn't it? And it really marks that initial phase of his shift toward nonfiction. Hints of the collage, the anti-novel stuff to come. He's pushing at the edges of fiction.
It's leading real life into the narrative.
Exactly. Seeing how much reality the form could hold. He continued this with Handbook for Drowning in 92, a novel and stories, still experimenting with structure, fragmenting things.
Like the traditional container wasn't quite big enough anymore for what he wanted to explore.
Perfectly put. He was testing the structural integrity of fiction itself.
And if you connect that to the bigger picture, this wasn't just, you know, his artistic journey. It was a signal, a kind of harbinger of the genre bending that would really define his later stuff.
So when did it really crystallize? When did that evolution become something properly groundbreaking?
I'd say the pivotal moment was 1996, publication of Remote. Reflections on life in the shadow of celebrity.
Okay, Remote.
This was Shields' first explicitly literary collage. A.O. Scott, I think it was in Newsday, called it one of the definitive texts of the 1990s, a trim, elegant, nonfiction answer to Infinite Jest.
Wow, comparing it to Infinite Jest, that's serious praise.
It is, because Remote isn't a linear story, it's a mosaic. Observations, anecdotes, quotes, reflections, all circling around celebrity culture, its distorting influence.
So the coherence comes from the theme, the collection, not a plot.
Exactly. Like a curated exhibition in book form.
Yeah.
And this book, it wasn't just a personal win for Shields. It cemented his reputation as a pioneer of collage. And crucially, it laid the groundwork, intellectually and stylistically, for the even more radical ideas in his most famous work later on.
Ooh, Manifesto.
Manifesto. Remote showed he wasn't just writing about reality. He was starting to use reality itself, fragmented, sampled as his main artistic medium, building his case piece by piece.
And it feels like all those threads we talked about, the journalism background, the activism, the traditional lit education, those early experiments, it all just had to converge, didn't it?
Seems inevitable looking back.
Converging towards that seismic event, reality hunger, a manifesto published by Knopf in 2010. And this wasn't just, you know, a discussion. It was a declaration, a challenge.
A call to arms, really.
Absolutely. A provocation aimed right at the heart of contemporary art and literature.
Alyssa Chappell in Vanity Fair nailed it, didn't she? She called it a rousing call to arms for all artists to reject the laws governing appropriation, obliterate the boundaries between fiction and nonfiction, and give rise to a new modern form for a new century.
I mean, talk about making a statement. It was like an artistic bomb dropped onto the scenes.
And it had legs. Lin Hub later called it one of the 100 most important books of the 2010s. It genuinely shaped the decade.
So what does this mean for us? As readers, as consumers of art, it means we're dealing with a text that tried to redefine the whole game.
And it sparked this huge, necessary conversation about what art is, what it could be.
Yeah, it fundamentally changes how you might approach the stuff you read or watch, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And reality hunger isn't just about an idea. The book itself is the idea in action. It embodies its own argument.
How so?
Well, Shields' core concept, the reality hunger itself, comes from his observation of our culture, increasingly fragmented, right?
Definitely.
And he sees people having this growing hunger for doses of real life injected into the art they experience. We crave authenticity, even mediated authenticity.
Like on social media, reality TV.
Exactly. And he argued traditional genres, especially realist fiction, just weren't cutting it anymore. They hadn't changed much in centuries, he felt. They were trying to capture reality with outdated tools, failing to mirror the complexity, the disjointedness of modern life.
So the form itself needed an update.
That was his argument. And the book's structure is that update. It's not a linear argument. It's 618 numbered passages, 26 chapters. And here's the kicker.
Yeah.
Roughly half the words in the book are from other sources, not Shields himself.
Half? Wow, that's not just influence. That's
full-on appropriation as method. And the attributions? Apparently, Random House lawyers insisted, so they're stuck in a fine print appendix at the end.
But Shields didn't want them there.
No. He actually encouraged readers to cut those pages out. To preserve the disorienting effect, he said. Force you to engage with the ideas regardless of who first wrote them.
That's incredibly bold. It's him demonstrating his whole artistic philosophy, his Ars Poetica, right there on the page.
Precisely. Challenging the very act of reading, questioning originality itself.
Okay, let's dive into the themes, because that's where it gets really uncomfortable for some, but maybe liberating for others. Starting with the big one, appropriation and, yeah, plagiarism.
The P word.
The P word.
Yeah.
He argues plagiarism has always been part of art, that the stigma is pretty recent, mostly tied to copyright law, not some inherent moral wrong.
Right. A legal construct more than an artistic one, in his view.
And he doesn't just tolerate appropriation. He encourages it. Wholesale appropriation, he says. Reality-based art hijacks its material and doesn't apologize.
Strong words. But it's nuanced, isn't it? He's not saying just steal stuff.
No, not quite. It's more about recontextualizing, representing existing material to create something new, like a DJ sampling a beat.
Yeah, the hip-hop analogy is key. He has a whole chapter on it.
Right. D-stake sampling, remixing, foundational to hip-hop. He holds that up as a model for literature, what's celebrated in music, taking existing sounds, transforming them. Why not in writing?
Seeing the world's cultural output as this giant shared resource pool.
Exactly. Not just static copyrighted things, but dynamic material for artists to reconfigure, to spark new meaning.
So it makes you think, right? In our remix culture online, sharing memes, snippets, are we all kind of living this already?
Maybe informally, yeah. Is Shields just making formal art catch up to how we actually engage with information now? He's asking us to update our definition of originality.
And building on that, challenging authorship, he takes aim at the wall between memoir and fiction.
Ah, yeah, that divide. He says it's mostly imaginary.
Which is pretty provocative. His logic is based on how both forms actually work. Fiction writers. They pull constantly from their own lives, memories, observations.
Sure, right, what do you know?
And memoirists. They aim for accuracy, sure, but they rely on memory. And memory, Shields says flatly, does not necessarily reflect the truth of what occurred.
So the act of remembering itself is a kind of fictionalizing.
That's his point, leading to that killer quote. Anything processed by memory is fiction. The moment you recall, shape, and narrate an experience, it's transformed. It becomes an interpretation.
So the value of a memoir shouldn't just be about strict factual accuracy.
That's what he argues. It's a fascinating thought experiment. Think about family stories, how much reconstruction goes on there.
All the time.
And he famously brings up James Frey. A million little pieces.
Oh, yeah, the big scandal. He made stuff up.
Right. Huge public outcry. Oprah got involved. But Shields' take was different. He said Frey's real mistake wasn't lying. It was apologizing.
Really?
Shields wrote, I'm disappointed not that Frey is a liar, but that he isn't a better one. He thought Frey should own the artistic license. Said something like, everyone who writes about himself is a liar. I created someone better than me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite a stance.
It's not about endorsing deception. It's about making us think critically. What is truth in a personal story? Factual accuracy. Or emotional truth? Artistic truth.
It forces you to see narrative as interpretation. Always.
Yeah.
Regardless of the label.
Exactly. Making us question our own demands for a true story.
And this breaking free from structures, from categories, that leads right into his next big theme, right? The call for new forms.
Absolutely. He puts huge importance on artists not just working within forms, but actively creating new ones. Forms that better fit our reality now.
Because genre boundaries.
Our limitations. Confinement. He calls genre that famous phrase, a minimum security prism.
Love that.
His belief. Those boundaries need constant bending, breaking, blurring. Because life isn't neat. It's messy, fragmented. defies easy boxes.
And the form he champions most is collage.
Yes. Reality Hunger itself is a literary collage. He calls it an evolution beyond narrative.
Why an evolution?
Because, he argues, traditional narrative beginning, middle, and conflict resolved, it forces a false sense of order onto the world. It suggests resolution is inevitable.
Like stories have to make sense, have a neat ending.
Right. And Shields challenges that directly. He says, story seems to say that everything happens for a reason, and I want to say, no, it doesn't.
That hits hard. Because we are conditioned to expect that narrative arc in everything.
We are. We look for cause and effect, for meaning, even when it's not there. And collage, for Shields, is more honest. It's fragmented, open-ended. It reflects life's ambiguity.
Doesn't pretend to give you answers.
Exactly. It invites you to grapple with the questions, like looking at a fractured mirror. Each piece shows something, but the whole picture is incomplete, complex, more like reality.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And what's really striking is he didn't just write the manifesto and stop. He lived it in his work afterwards.
Kept putting those ideas into practice.
Vigorously. In the decade after Reality Hunger, he published, what, a dozen more books. Many collaborative, almost all trying to embody that Ars Poetica. It wasn't just theory, it was his blueprint.
He walked the talk.
Totally. Look at Salinger, 2013, co-written with Shane Salerno, a New York Times bestseller.
The oral biography.
Right. It defied nonfiction conventions. No single author voice driving it. Instead, it pieces together interviews, letters, accounts, a mosaic portrait from primary sources. John Walsh in the Sunday Times called it stupendous, said the world wouldn't need another Salinger bio.
High praise indeed.
Then there's, I think you're totally wrong, A Quarrel in 2015 with Caleb Powell.
Oh, the Book of Arguments.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
Transcribed conversations, emails, two guys with very different views, praised for erasing that boundary between the public mask and the private self. Leslie Jameson said the goal wasn't agreement, but collaborative inquiry, letting readers into the messiness.
So applying the collage fragment idea to relationships, dialogue.
And other collaborations did too. Jeff, one lonely guy using dating profile material, that thing you do with your mouth, the as told to sexual autobiography, all showing art made from raw life, assembled, reassembled.
And it's fascinating how he uses that method, not just for personal stuff, but to take apart bigger societal narratives, powerful institutions even.
Like with War is Beautiful.
Exactly. 2015, that book on New York Times war photography, not just showing photos, but deconstructing them.
Showing how aesthetically pleasing images of conflict could.
Glamorize it, right? Manipulate perception. He sampled and remixed the Times' own images to reveal this hidden narrative about media, beauty, and power.
Using their own material against them in a way. Critically.
And then nobody hates Trump more than Trump in 2018. Again, a mosaic of quotes, observations, a found object psychological portrait.
Applying his methods to contemporary politics.
Because his ideas aren't just, you know, academic exercises. They're potent tools for critically analyzing media, power, the story shaping our world, peeling back the layers.
And that commitment to deconstruction, montage, reality-based art. It led him quite naturally into documentary film, didn't it?
Seems like a logical next step.
A powerful extension of the collage style. His 2019 film, Lynch. A history. That was a major shift. He wrote, produced, directed.
About Marshawn Lynch, the football player.
Yes, but specifically about Lynch's use of silence, echo, mimicry as forms of resistance in the sports world. And the film itself uses montage. Found footage, interviews, juxtapositions, nonlinear. Just like his book.
So the form mirrored the subject.
Beautifully. Wow. And it was critically acclaimed. Premiered at Seattle Film Fest, awards at IDFA, Amsterdam, Golden Sunbreak win.
People really responded to it.
They did. Wasu and The New Yorker called it the culmination of Shields' career, the ultimate expression of his vision across media.
He's still going.
Oh, yeah. So. Upcoming 2024 film and book, How We Got Here, sounds typically audacious, drawing lines between Melville, Nietzsche, Alan Bloom, Hujek, and Steve Bannon.
Wow. The constellation.
Right. Forcing us to see unexpected connections shaping our present. Shows the intellectual daring, the breadth of his reality-based art. Always pushing, connecting disparate things to find new, maybe uncomfortable insights.
Okay, so back to Reality Hunger. As you'd expect, a manifesto that bold, that boundary-breaking. It didn't land quietly.
No, definitely stirred the pot. Lots of debate, controversy right from the start.
Absolutely. On one side, huge praise. People felt he was articulating something they already felt. Chuck Klosterman tweeted it might be the most intense, thought-accelerating book of the last 10 years.
High praise from Klosterman.
And Lucy Sante in the NYT Book Review said it urgently and succinctly addresses matters that have been in the air. She even predicted his book heralded the dominant modes to come, a paradigm shift.
Seeing it as the future.
But not everyone was buying it. Or maybe they felt he went too far.
Understandable resistance.
The book provoked substantial controversy, especially around his death of the novel claims.
Yeah, novelists weren't thrilled about that.
Understandably.
Yeah.
And his advocacy of appropriation, or artistic plagiarism, as critics saw it.
James Wood in The New Yorker called it highly problematic.
What was his main issue?
Wood felt Shields promoted reality over narrative without really examining what reality meant. Too simplistic, maybe. He worried that devaluing narrative meant losing the tools we use to make sense of things, find meaning.
A valid concern, perhaps. Did Wood dismiss him entirely?
No, and this is key. Even Wood conceded that Shields' arguments about the tediousness and terminality of current fictional convention are well taken.
So even critics admitted he was onto something, that he identified a real problem even if they didn't like his solution.
Exactly. He hit a raw nerve, forced a conversation, even a contentious one, made people re-examine assumptions. That's often the mark of influential work.
Right. It makes things happen.
And that impact, that catalyzing effect, is why Reality Hunger has been so influential on 21st century nonfiction, on autofiction, on documentary film.
It shaped the landscape.
Definitely. It gave artists permission, almost, to blur lines, experiment with form, engage more directly with the raw, messy stuff of life, break out of that minimum security prison of genre.
Find new ways to talk about modern life.
And this influence isn't just theory. Look at the recognition he's received over his career. Beyond Reality Hunger Buzz, Guggenheim Fellowship, 2 NEAs, the P.N. Rebson Award, NYFA Fellowship.
Serious accolades.
Plus the Film Awards for Lynch, his books hitting the New York Times bestseller list. The thing about life is that one day you'll be dead, Salinger. Shows critical and popular appeal. Black Planet was a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award and PEN USA.
So a consistent body of recognized work.
Absolutely. It shows that even when he's controversial, pushing boundaries, making people uncomfortable, Shields is a major force, constantly pushing the envelope of what art can be and getting recognized for it.
So wrapping this up, what does it all mean for us deep divers navigating our own lives?
Yeah.
Lives full of mediated reality. David Shields really emerges as this relentless innovator, right? A fearless provocateur, someone who makes us rethink storytelling, rethink authenticity and art.
From that start in journalism and activism.
Through mastering traditional forms.
To radically embracing collage and appropriation.
He just consistently challenged the status quo. Refused conventional boundaries, his impact on how we think about narrative, truth, genre in books. In film, it's undeniable.
He influenced everything from nonfiction structure to documentary ethos.
And he reminds us that the art we consume, it's never just a simple mirror of reality. It's always a construction, an interpretation, a choice.
And maybe as we finish, it's worth thinking about this. In our age of deepfakes, curated online lives, this overwhelming flood of information, Shields' reality hunger feels more urgent than ever.
More relevant now than in 2010, perhaps.
Why possibly? His call to question, deconstruct, seek new forms of truth and expression, it feels vital. He forces us to be active engagers, not just passive consumers.
So the final thought for everyone listening.
With Shields' ideas swirling around, how do you figure out what's authentic in the art and info you take in daily? And maybe, what new forms, what new artistic answers might emerge as our collective hunger for reality keeps evolving in this really complex century?
It's a big question.
It is. And it's one Shields' work absolutely compels us to confront. It's only going to become more important as we go forward.